Through the cooperation of the National Broadcasting Company's associated stations, we're able to present this broadcast from the flooded regions. And now we take you to Portsmouth, Ohio.
Radio friends, the National Broadcasting Company greet you from Portsmouth, Ohio. No relief is in sight for this desolate appearing city, its business district covered by some 21 feet of muddy water. The Ohio and Scioto Rivers, forming a vast inland lake at their confluence, continue a relentless rise. Hopes are high that the flood, which has now passed every conservative and exaggerated estimation, will not cause complete interruption of electric service. It is true that the service has been interrupted several times throughout the day, but at the moment, lights are burning brightly. The water supply system is holding its own and probably can stand 7 or 8 days of flood before becoming dangerous. Telephone service definitely will not be stopped beyond the city limits, even though the power it now is using should fail. Uninterrupted supply of gas continues to be, as it has been for the past few days, in the lap of the gods. That, in brief, is the present situation of the public utilities. Throughout the day, the most important function of rescue work has been the untiring efficiency of the telephone operators. So for a moment, I want you to hear from Miss Winnie Herman. She is in charge of telephone service.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm really proud of the girls after today. We realize that loss of sleep and lack of wholesome food and the anxiety of such conditions as we are experiencing here at Portsmouth cause one's nerves to become disturbed. We hope and aim to do some good. If that is accomplished, we shall be happy. To my mind, the most important occurrence of the day happened early this evening when the electric supply failed. We stopped all other activity and in a few seconds were in contact with the Philo Station and Canova, West Virginia Station of the Ohio Power Company. And while the conversation was still taking place, the powers were restored, and believe me, I hope it doesn't fail again. Good night.
And so do I, Miss Herman. You certainly are doing a grand job around here today. And I'll further report on Portsmouth. It began raining at 4 a.m. this morning. It continued for 4 hours. It has been raining here during the past 2 hours. It is coming down rather hard at the moment. But during the middle of the day, a bright sunshine appeared and, of course, was most welcome to the various rescue workers. They consist of State Highway Patrol, Red Cross, National Guard, and American Legion. Route 23 into Portsmouth from Chillicothe, the roadway upon which the last known load of food and medicine traveled into the city, is now under 10 inches of water, and it is thought that by morning will be impassable. Passage through New Boston caused early yesterday, and the supply trucks are unable to proceed. However, they did come over Ford Hill. That, too, became so muddy and treacherous early this evening that machines sunk to axle depth. Riverboats are unable to sail the Ohio or Scioto to meet aid trucks on account of the bridges that are still hanging fast to their moorings. Tonight, for the first time, the residents of Portsmouth Hilltop, a known residential district, began to feel food shortage. That due, perhaps, to the onrush of refugees from the lower part of the city. Several crew of county engineers and state patrol spent the day rowing near railroad cars, and from the top of those cars, there was peaking large lumps of coal. They took the coal with their boats and brought it over onto dry land. That has been distributed to the refugees. Tonight, they are burning it in the available stove. When the coal supply fails, which will be perhaps tomorrow evening or the next day, kerosene will be a most popular fuel. The water is still rising. At the moment, we have just had a report from one of the engineers. It is 70.56. So you see, the city of Portsmouth is really in a bad way. We hope that by morning, some of the necessary medicines and so forth can be brought to the overcrowded schoolhouse, Lincoln School, and also to the hospital. But at the moment, everybody is a bit nonchalant. The folks that really wanted to stay in their homesteads and ride out the flood, as it were, the flood now has reached the second story. Many of them are climbing up into their attics. But onward go the state patrol. They have increased the number of boats. They are sailing to the flooded area, and they are bringing out of the attic windows those who refuse to leave at the first order of evacuation. But anyway, the rescue work goes on. No deaths have been reported due particularly to the flood. have been several deaths throughout the day due perhaps to overexposure or other natural causes. But no particular casualties have been reported by the rescue workers. That seems to be our story here from Portsmouth, Ohio. The rescue work goes on under the able and guiding hand of Colonel Lynn Black and his great crew of men. We continue now from Louisville.
This is radio station WAVE in Louisville, Kentucky, reporting to the nation over a national broadcasting company network on the flood situation in Louisville. Our last network broadcast was at 2:35 this afternoon, at which time the river stage was 52 4/10 feet. The stage at 10 o'clock tonight was 54 feet, a rise of about a foot and a half. Flood stage on the Ohio River at Louisville being 28 feet, the river is now 26 feet above flood level. The steady, continuous rain, which began at 3 o'clock this morning, lasted until 7 o'clock tonight. At that time, it changed to a slow drizzle, which continues at the present time. The rainfall of the past week has been simply unbelievable, and its effect is unbelievable to anyone who has not seen the results. The most serious aspects of the situation at present are the water supply and the electric power supply. Mayor Neville Miller announced at 5:20 this afternoon that the Louisville Gas and Electric Company had acknowledged defeat in the battle they were grimly, desperately waging to keep some slight electric power available. That tonight at 8 o'clock, the city power supply would have to shut off and that there would be no lights available. That also meant that there would be no power available for the two radio stations to stay on the air. Since the rescue work by boat and truck depends so largely on radio instructions for guidance, that was bad. Here at WAVE, we started trying to find some auxiliary means of supplying power to stay on the air. By broadcast messages, long-distance telephone, teletype, and telegraph, we've tried to find a generator that would give us power when the city supply was finally shut off. When 8 o'clock came, power and lights in all sections of the city, except one, were shut off. But the downtown central district is still on by a miracle, and we are still on the air and still broadcasting. Literally, minute by minute, as we read rescue messages intended for the boats and trucks engaged in evacuating people from the flooded areas, we thought we would be off the air. We may go off the air during this brief broadcast to NBC, but so far, we are still on. I said this afternoon when we reported at 2:35 that the extent of the sections of the city underwater had simply passed belief by anyone familiar with the city. Since then, with continued rain, the situation is, of course, still worse. That entire section of the city west of 15th Street has been ordered evacuated. In the central and east central sections, water has covered many blocks never before considered subject to any possible menace from flood. Probably 150,000 people in Louisville alone have been evacuated from their homes, or they are still marooned in their homes, surrounded by water. But the rescue work goes steadily on with boat and truck and automobile. Boat stations have been established all over the city. Messages are called into the radio stations. They are put on the air. The boats, equipped with radio, go to those places and pick up people, take them to the edge of the water where trucks pick them up. Trucks take them to theaters, schools, churches, where they're being housed temporarily for the next few days. How many days? We cannot say. The water supply is bad. There is still enough water for a few days by strict rationing. Water is turned on 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour in the afternoon. How long that supply will hold out, of course, it is impossible to say. Warnings have gone out to all citizens to be vaccinated for typhoid, and all drinking water has been ordered boiled. I told you this afternoon that the staff here at WAVE was almost on the point of exhaustion. But then, of course, all rescue workers all over the city are. Well, that's all we have to say for tonight. We hope for the best. We don't know how long it'll be before we'll have a really hopeful note. This is George Patterson reporting to you from station WAVE in Louisville. We take you now to Cincinnati.
Stripped of all dramatics, this terse statement from the United States Weather Bureau at Cincinnati tells the true story of the flood in Greater Cincinnati. River stage at 10 o'clock tonight, 76.8 feet. That is approximately 25 feet above flood stage. The Ohio River continues to rise at approximately 0.3 feet per hour. A peak stage of 78 feet is expected here late tonight. Rains up and down the river from Pittsburgh to Louisville are continuing. Weather forecast for Cincinnati and vicinity are light rains and unsettled weather Monday. As to general conditions, no actual martial law, but the citizens are responding wholeheartedly to the proclamation of City Manager Dykstra, which has placed industry under emergency restrictions and regulated the activities of individuals for the general good of all. A close checkup at Red Cross headquarters, police and fire department headquarters, failed to uncover any casualties. The fires which threatened the entire western section of Cincinnati this morning are reported under control at this hour, although reports are reaching us constantly of huge gasoline tanks being torn from their foundations in various parts of the community and spewing their highly inflammable contents over the floodwaters to be spread over large areas. Right at this moment, a huge tank of 250,000 gallons of gasoline is reported floating down the floodwaters toward Fern Bank, a Cincinnati suburb approximately 10 miles down the river from Cincinnati proper. And now for a brief first-hand account of conditions in a refugee haven, we take you to the WLW Mobile Unit Number 1.
This is Henry L. Turner, and what do? You're a relief worker, aren't you, with the American Red Cross?
I'm not with the Red Cross, really. I volunteered in an emergency.
You volunteered. You look awfully tired, Mrs. Turner. Have you been working hard?
Well, ask me next week.
I'll ask you next week. Just what have you...
Well, it was down on the waterfront of the sites here at about 4:30 Friday afternoon when a building collapsed. We saw the fire engines, and I had a friend with me who had a Red Cross armband and had been working for 2 days. So, we just volunteered.
We're off.
Since shortly after 3 o'clock Sunday afternoon, Cincinnati has been without street railway service. This step was taken to conserve electric power. Motor buses are in many instances replacing the trolley lines. Red Cross officials report but little sickness among the thousands of homeless and feel certain that the emergency measures adopted and the efficient tactics being employed by the sanitary officers of the city will prevent a serious epidemic of any kind. Traffic across the suspension bridge connecting Covington, Kentucky with Cincinnati has for the time being been suspended. But the bridge officials assure us there is no danger of the bridge collapsing. The floodwaters have been closing the approaches on both sides of the river, and as soon as roadways are constructed, traffic across the only remaining connecting link between Ohio and Kentucky at this point will be resumed. Fire engines have been assigned to various hospitals in the flooded zone. They are serving a double purpose, pumping water from the cellars, water which threatened the heating and lighting plants of these institutions, and being on hand for the more gruesome task of fighting any fire which might start. Any estimate of the damage wrought by the waters and fires at this time is purely guesswork. The damage to property in the flood zone is mounting hourly as the floodwaters continue to rise. One estimate, which appears to be generally accepted, places the damage at $10 million. But an estimate made at this hour would of necessity have to be increased an hour later. It will be weeks before any fair estimate can be made. There is a most urgent need for food, clothing, and shelter. Medical supplies are also needed, but as yet, there is fortunately no alarming shortage in medical supplies. Flood boats, great yaws, which have been rushed from the Atlantic seaboard and the Great Lakes, are now resting in the floodwaters, moored to the tops of lampposts and telegraph poles,
within a few hundred feet of Cincinnati's main shopping street and within a stone's throw from the city's leading hotels. And the kitchens of these hotels are now being used to prepare meals not for the guests alone, but for the guests of shelter houses filled with refugees taken from the riverfront homes. Reserve officers have been mobilized and are augmenting the police force. But there has been reported but one instance of looting, and that, we are glad to say, has not been confirmed at this hour. That is all from WLW in Cincinnati. We take you now to Memphis.
From the editorial rooms of the Commercial Appeal, we bring you a review of the flood in this territory by Mr. Frank Algren, executive editor.
As the Red Cross ordered the city of Paducah, a city of more than 33,000 persons, evacuated, United States engineers and volunteer workers struggled heroically tonight against another monstrous flood. There was danger all along the line. The engineers sent a boat tonight to Black Island on the Mississippi River near Caruthersville, Missouri, where 300 were known to be marooned on the housetop. Two other boats were due to reach there before morning. The engineers pushed supplies into Tiptonville, Tennessee, Cardwell, Missouri, and Island 35 near Covington, Tennessee to relieve a desperate situation at all three sectors. Most of the refugees have been marooned for several days without food in the bitter cold weather. Lieutenant Colonel Eugene Raybould, district engineer, revealing that farmers of the Bird's Point, New Madrid, Missouri floodway had successfully resisted every attempt to open the fuse plug Riverside levee to inundate the spillway and relieve the pressure at Cairo, Illinois, considered drastic measures to enforce his order. Guardsmen will accompany the engineers into the zone to cut the levee. 100 families have been reported as being forced to evacuate Island Number 35 in the Mississippi River between Munford, Tennessee and Wilson, Arkansas, after the river had flooded the island. The island is at the narrowest width of the Mississippi River between St. Louis and New Orleans, and of course the current there is one of the swiftest at any point in the river. It is the first time in history, according to reports, that the island has been inundated. Two motorboats are removing the families to Richardson Landing, where there is one general store. They need additional boats. In southern Illinois, the entire district around Shawneetown has been isolated. There is need of typhoid vaccine there. In Missouri, cracks are appearing in the levee near Charleston. Families of the section that would be inundated in the event of a break have been ordered out. In Arkansas, we have been asked to repeat the appeal from Governor Carl Bailey, made late this afternoon, asking that motorists not use any of the highways in eastern Arkansas except through absolute necessity because of the heavy traffic of Highway 70 into Memphis from the west. A bus bringing refugees in this city was delayed over an hour. In the meantime, the Mid-South is responding to the Red Cross appeal. With money and clothing, the main need to care for the refugees, the situation finds many willing to help. Cash and clothing was the Mid-South answer tonight, less than 24 hours after the Red Cross took the field for a minimum of $40,000 needed to carry out the disaster program here. The fund had reached the $5,000 mark, and the pace was speedily moving ahead to a greater amount of money and additional clothing. The Commercial Appeal is receiving contributions to this fund, and so is WMC, and so is WNBR. The radio stations report a continuous stream of contributions.
You have just heard from Mr. Frank Algren, the executive editor of the Commercial Appeal, in a review of the flood in this territory. We return you to the main studios of radio station WMC.
We have a message here to Rayburn at Osceola. Rayburn at Osceola, the Bulletin Fleet at Osceola. Major Rayburn, we have located a 75-watt shortwave transmitter with operator. It will leave Mississippi tonight and arrive at Osceola about 8 or 9 in the morning. I'll repeat that. We have located a 75-watt shortwave transmitter and operator, and it will leave Mississippi tonight and arrive at Osceola about 8 or 9 in the morning. And here's a message to all NYA County foremen in Flood District of Arkansas. Use every available person for the assistance to relief agencies for benefits of flood refugees, regardless of the number of hours. use every available person for the assistance to relief agencies for benefits of flood refugees, regardless of the number of hours. And it's signed Charles Jasper, District Supervisor, NYA. To the residents of Ashport, Tennessee and vicinity, Potter Dredge Boat is now at Ashport and will take refugees picked up at Gold Dust and inhabitants of Ashport to Ashport Bluff tomorrow. Anyone wanting to get out, come to Jap Henderson's store at Ashport tonight or as early as possible. Anyone coming to Henderson's store knowing of someone who has no boat and cannot get out, report this fact to Henderson, and it's signed U.S. Engineers. We repeat a message that we gave a little earlier. John Walker of Covington, Tennessee. Your telegram received okay. The steamship Minnesota will stop at Richardson Landing tonight. Be sure to care for the refugees aboard. The Minnesota left Memphis at 7:10 p.m. We have a message now for our shortwave transmitter, WABG. Please contact us at 10:40. Please contact us at 10:40. A message to WABG. Please contact WMC at 10:40. And here's a message for Bill Fielding. We want to tell you that we may have an American airline plane radio equipped in your territory tomorrow. We'll let you know definitely later. And also, when you contact us at 10:40, let us know if you know of any landing spots. And those are the messages that we have on hand at the present time. And so we now take you to Evansville, Indiana.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Here's the flood situation from headquarters at Evansville, Indiana. Martial law was declared tonight by Governor Townsend of Indiana in that portion of the state affected by the flood. Colonel Lewis L. Roberts of the Indiana National Guard this evening called a hurried meeting of National Guard officials, city and state officials, and those in charge of the relief agencies operating out of Evansville to the stricken people of this section of the country, Indiana, Kentucky, and Illinois. Martial law taking effect tomorrow morning means hereabouts the temporary suspension of civil authority and the exercise of governmental authority through the agency of the military establishment. Colonel Roberts is commander of this military district, including Evansville, Vandenberg County, and other flood-affected areas which can be contacted and with which communication can be maintained from Evansville. Colonel Roberts is effecting an organization to work in closest cooperation with Charles Carr, the director of Red Cross Relief in Indiana and Kentucky, Anthony Fleming, head of the government engineers working their boats up and down the belligerent Ohio River, and the local Red Cross. At the time that these extreme measures were officially put into effect tonight, Colonel Roberts announced that this move does not indicate any immediate or extreme peril in this section, but is a precautionary measure to reduce hardship and expedite relief work. These are some of the regulations in effect. Idle curious must not congregate in or near flood areas. People evacuated must stay out of flood areas while rescue work is going on. Downtown motor traffic must be cut to the minimum. Motor fuel must be conserved. And service station owners here have been warned not to sell oil or gasoline to anyone who has not a legitimate need for transportation by motor. The fuel is badly needed for boats. Public and parochial schools are closed. Meanwhile, the rampant Ohio, yellow and swollen beyond any proportions recorded heretofore, is licking its way up the banks to unprecedented heights and creeping across the riverfront streets of Evansville. Adding to the many boats already working up and down the river, carrying supplies and effecting rescue work, 27 Coast Guard picket boats, light, fast, and with cabin space, have been ordered in from Wisconsin to this town. Also, 10 carloads of foodstuffs, 50 nurses and medical supplies, 50 outboard motors, 3,000 cots and blankets. They're all on their way to Evansville. At the present time, with the crest of the flood now moved along to late next week, it is reported here that Cincinnati and Evansville are the only points out of which long-distance relief boats can be maintained, loaded, and dispatched. Consequently, in this region, there is a concerted move to concentrate food and supplies. It is still hoped that the weather will clear so that the Coast Guard amphibian planes can be set down in the Ohio in front of Evansville, but so far they have not been able to get through this bad weather. The weather has been hampering the work here. Heavy rains, sleet, and snow have forced the relief workers to carry on their work of mercy under the most adverse of conditions. But the work is being carried on to the fullest extent. There is absolutely no shortage of food. Word has reached here that there is plenty of food in Louisville for the people of that stricken community, but there is no surplus for the folk in distress outside of that city. Efforts are underway tonight for special trains of food supplies to be made up at Indianapolis and Terre Haute to be shipped here, as this is the only nearby base where boats can work. 10 carloads of Coast Guard boats arrived a short time ago and are being unloaded now and being put into the river. So high is the water along the riverfront, crowding its way into streets, that the large river boats cannot come close enough to be fueled to take on oil and gas and the load. Consequently, a big ramp is being hastily thrown together and tomorrow morning will be placed running out over the seawall onto the river to be used as a dock. A late report to government engineers indicates that McLean County and Hardin County, an adjoining county in Kentucky on the Green River, are 80% underwater and are expected to be 95% inundated when the crest is reached. There's been no report on the flood level of the river since our earlier report that it stands at 50 feet and 2/10. The crest is expected now, tentatively, to rise to 53 or 54 feet, between 53 and 54. An official weather forecast is that the weather now is clearing considerable. More later for Evansville, Indiana. Now we return you to Chicago.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, due to difficulties beyond our control, we are unable to continue from Evansville. The National Broadcasting Company has just completed a tour of the flooded areas of the Middle West where the rising waters of the Ohio River and its feeders has already made 350,000 men, women, and children homeless. From these scenes of tragedy and desolation have come amazing stories of individual bravery and heroism. Even after the crest of the flood waters has passed, and the nation fervently hopes the crisis will soon pass, there's a big job remaining to be done. In the forefront of rescue work stands the Red Cross, all organizations of which are active. The Red Cross appeals to everyone to assist those in the isolated areas who are in need. To this great end, Admiral Grayson, chairman of the Red Cross, asked that contributions be sent to any of the 3,700 Red Cross chapters throughout the country. There is a Red Cross chapter, a branch in every community. And this is the National Broadcasting Company.
The National Broadcasting Company presents a special flood roundup from the Press Radio Bureau. President Roosevelt kept his private telephone open all night, receiving telephone calls for federal aid from the stricken flood areas. The president has ordered 35,000 WPA workers to emergency flood duty along the 1,800 miles of raging rivers. The WPA Army will aid in evacuating thousands from cities and towns in the Ohio and Mississippi River valleys, and also will be on guard duty at food stations. This emergency army also will build refugee camps and aid state and federal health authorities who are fighting the spread of contagious diseases. WPA Administrator Hopkins says that 100,000 mattresses and comforters, which were made on WPA women's projects, have been ordered sent to the flood areas, and that 300 boats have been borrowed for their delivery. Federal health authorities are taking over control of the available water supplies in Louisville, Portsmouth, Ohio, and will chlorinate all drinking water before it is used. This precaution is being taken to prevent the spread of disease. There is assurance this morning that food supplies will be rapidly moved into the flooded cities and towns which are destitute. The United States Navy is sending vessels from the Navy Yards at Philadelphia and Norfolk, West Virginia, to the stricken area. These vessels, in addition to some 150 Coast Guard boats, will deliver beef, eggs, and canned milk to stricken cities. The supplies are owned by the government's Commodities Surplus Corporation and have been released by President Roosevelt. To provide money for the destitute, WPA Administrator Hopkins said, it will open the nation's relief rolls to victims of the flood. The government has listed all rules and regulations in the emergency, and he promised that all the money necessary will be provided by the government. The Coast Guard is moving ships up the Mississippi to the Louisville and Cincinnati area. These boats are loaded with medicine, blankets, and other emergency supplies. Altogether, 72 rescue vessels of the Coast Guard are now operating in the stricken area. President Roosevelt has arranged for 2 conferences daily at the White House with Red Cross officials and is in personal communication with officials at Cincinnati. and to supplement the work of the WPA Army, 12,000 CCC workers are now on duty in the flood zone. The Red Cross in Washington estimates that some 350,000 persons are homeless in the 11 states that are flooded. The total damage is expected to go beyond the high mark of $300 million last year. Under the protection of armed National Guardsmen, United States Army engineers were prepared this morning to dynamite the Ohio River levee below Cairo, Illinois, in order to save that city. Up to now, Cairo has escaped heavy damage under protection of a flood wall. The guardsmen are necessary there because farmers have prevented the opening of the levee so far by threatening to shoot the engineers. The National Guardsmen will be under the direction of Lieutenant Colonel Eugene Raybulk of the United States Regular Army. 7 Coast Guard amphibian planes, which were ordered to flood duty, have been unable to reach the stricken area because of rain, fog, and other bad weather. The Coast Guard also is sending a number of portable radio stations to various cities in order to restore communications where none now exist. 2 Coast Guard portable stations already are operating, and 4 more will be set up immediately. The biggest problem is transporting food and supplies to small communities, according to Admiral Kerry T. Grayson, chairman of the American Red Cross. The Admiral has a fleet of outboard motorboats numbering 100 at anchor in Evansville, Indiana, and these will be used in reaching the small communities, he said. Altogether, 120 emergency stations have been opened by the Red Cross. Each of these stations will begin immediately to buy whatever clothing and foodstuff is necessary. From Memphis, Tennessee to Cincinnati, Ohio, there was desolation, and scores of towns along the 1,800 miles of waterways have not been heard from in some time. The latest survey by News Services says that the official death toll has reached 44, and this does not include the 12 convicts who were reported shot to death as they attempted to escape from the Kentucky State Prison in Frankfort. These 12 were in a party of 45 felons who had left the prison on rafts. The others were returned and were evacuated from the prison along with the almost 3,000 other inmates. These were taken to other state prisons and to county jails. Louisville, Kentucky was dark all night as the power plants broke down. The Ohio River was still rising there this morning, and half the city's population of more than 300,000 were without homes. The city's sewer system was not functioning, and health officials are fighting an epidemic of typhoid, pneumonia, and other diseases. However, the hospitals in Louisville have sufficient supplies to handle the situation at this time, but health authorities have appealed for more supplies. The telephone company reports that there have been an average of 1,200 calls for help every hour during the night, and all the while it keeps on raining and snowing alternately. Red Cross officials who finally got a boat to Black Island in the Mississippi River off Caruthersville, Missouri, report that 14 persons were drowned there. And at Evansville, Indiana, the Ohio River began spilling over the 51-foot flood wall which protects the city, and Army engineers say that if the river goes much higher, that 8,000 homes in Evansville will be flooded. The town of Aurora, Indiana, was completely isolated, and Coast Guardsmen who went to the rescue of the 1,000 inhabitants were forced to turn back because the current in the river was too swift for navigation. At Orville, Indiana, 150 persons have been marooned on a high hill since last Thursday, and since that time, 4 babies have been born on the hill and were reported this morning as doing nicely. In Jeffersonville, Indiana, the National Guard is evacuating the inhabitants as quickly as possible. They are being shipped north in boxcars, and in Jeffersonville, 200 cases of pneumonia have been reported. Cairo, Illinois, was still safe this morning, but water was dangerously near the top of the 60-foot flood wall protecting the city. And Governor Horner has ordered the levee below Cairo to be dynamited this morning by Army engineers. The governor has sent armed National Guardsmen to the scene of the proposed dynamiting and has ordered them to shoot any farmers who threaten the engineers while they work. The farmers, you know, have used firearms to keep engineers from opening the levee. And when this is done, hundreds of thousands of acres of farmland will be underwater. The governor of Illinois is determined to save the city of Cairo. Paducah, Kentucky, has no telephone service, and 20,000 are homeless. Power is out in most sections of the city, and the residents have been ordered to evacuate the city. City officials in Paducah have asked President Roosevelt for regular army troops to aid in the evacuation. There are 4,500 army troops now in the area, but Chief of Staff General Craig says these troops cannot be used for evacuation as they have more important work to do. In Lawrenceburg, Indiana, 7,000 refugees are living in 3 large distilleries up in the hills. They have established communication with the outside world through a police radio set, and one big warehouse has been turned into a hospital. In the city of Lawrenceburg, pneumonia is spreading, and the first death from this cause has been recorded. In Cincinnati, fire has again broken out in the factory district known as the Mill Creek District. There was a terrific fire there yesterday as gasoline floating on floodwaters became ignited by a broken live wire. The damage in that blaze was officially set at $1.5 million. And shortly after the blaze was under control, more blazing gasoline rode into the district on the crest of the flood, and the firemen went back to their work. In Cincinnati, there are now 56,000 homeless, and the drinking water supply has been shut off. The Ohio River is expected to reach the almost unbelievable height of 77 feet 5 inches today, and city manager Dykstra has appealed to citizens still having homes to burn only one electric light so that power can be conserved. However, the city manager said that radios could be operated so that the citizens would remain indoors. At Portsmouth, Ohio, wholesale looting of homes and business houses has added to the trouble of a city almost destroyed by the flood. And Portsmouth is facing an epidemic of diphtheria this morning. City health officials have appealed to Washington for a supply of serum with which to fight the disease. Up to now, there are 30,000 homeless in Portsmouth. At Truman, Arkansas, 3,000 residents were ordered to immediately evacuate the town as the wall of the St. Francis River began to crumble. Rescue workers in Coast Guard boats have at last reached Cardwell, Missouri, the place that has been known as the Lost City. For several days, boats were unable to reach the town, but supplies and food are now being distributed there. And at Tiptonville, Tennessee, the Coast Guard boats were unable to effect the rescue of the beleaguered citizens who are without food and fuel. The river was running too fast for navigation of the rescue vessel. Word has just come from Lieutenant Governor Johnson of Kentucky that there was no disorder during the evacuation of the 2,800 prisoners from the Frankfort prison. The lieutenant governor denied that 12 convicts had been shot to death while attempting to make their escape on rafts. This news is from the Press Radio Bureau and is based on the latest reports of the Associated Press, the United Press, and Universal Service. The Press Radio Bureau operates as a public service to radio listeners by the newspapers in cooperation with the broadcasters.
We are speaking from WMC, the commercial appeal station in Memphis, and before taking you to Blytheville, Arkansas for the shortwave broadcast and the actual flood scene, we present an outstanding figure active in the present flood emergency. Mr. George Meyer of the American Red Cross, directing disaster relief activities throughout Mississippi, Tennessee, and Louisiana, who is able to tell us something of the relief work that is being carried on right now. I understand, Mr. Meyer, that extensive plans are being made right here to take care of refugees. What provisions are being made for rescue?
In addition to the effort being made by the United States engineers and local forces, the United States Coast Guard is providing a fleet of small craft, totaling 22 in number, together with four large craft for the purpose of rescue and survey. This craft will be based at Memphis and will cover flooded areas both to the north and south as the need arises. In addition to this craft, the Coast Guard is providing two amphibians for survey work. Valiant service of local Red Cross units in the evacuation of flooded families into points of concentration will become historic in the annals of humanitarianism. Here in Memphis, provision has already been made to receive 5,000 refugees at a moment's notice. The same applies to other flooded sections throughout the area. A complete check from New Orleans, Louisiana to Cairo, Illinois has been made of all commercial craft, their location spotted, so that they may be pressed into service through radio advice for rescue work should the need arise.
Mr. Meyer, what provisions are being made to house and feed our people forced to leave their homes due to high water?
I've already indicated the housing facilities available throughout the affected area. For those families that are not in a position to provide for their own food needs due to the inaccessibility of food supplies, we are equipping United States Army dredges with staple foods that may easily be available to these families through the use of light craft transportation between the source of supply, which will be these dredges, and the concentration centers. 320,000 pounds of foodstuffs are now being moved into the affected territory.
Do you find much suffering as a result of the present conditions?
Due to the rapid functioning of local Red Cross units, very little suffering is being reported as a result of the present condition.
Where do you think conditions are worse at the moment?
Although conditions are acute on the east side of the Mississippi, our greatest problem at the moment seems to be in the St. Francis Basin of the Mississippi River Valley. Over 3,500 families have been forced to leave their homes and seek shelter in the ridge section of Arkansas and Missouri. These families are being given the essential care to ensure health and comfort. Should there be a further inundation, many additional families will need the attention of the Red Cross. We hope this contingency will not materialize. However, we are prepared to meet the need should it develop.
Well, thank you, Mr. Meyer. You have heard Mr. George Meyer of the American Red Cross directing disaster relief activities throughout Mississippi, Tennessee, and Louisiana. We take you now to Blytheville, Arkansas.
Thank you. This is Bill Fielding, ladies and gentlemen, speaking to you direct from Blytheville, Arkansas. We are down here with WABG, the shortwave portable transmitter of the Commercial Appeal, covering flood conditions throughout Arkansas and Missouri and reporting frequently both on the network and over the local station. Our present location is about 70 miles directly north of Memphis. Big Lake, the Big Lake region, which we are covering right now, is halfway between the Mississippi River and the St. Francis River, and about 20 miles from each. The Mississippi is 20 miles to our east, and the St. Francis 20 miles to our west. One of the major breaks which has occurred in the past few days occurred yesterday in the west levee of Big Lake, inundating many thousands of acres and driving, of course, hundreds of families out into the larger cities close by. Tonight we have a report that another break in the west levee, somewhat closer to us here, in fact about a mile north of the southern tip of the lake, is expected momentarily. Cold weather set in yesterday, and it's been very, very cold ever since. Practically all day yesterday we had a very heavy sleet storm. The sleet stopped late last night, but today the weather has continued colder. This has some advantages in that the rain stopped when the cold weather set in. But, of course, it has increased the discomfort of these people tremendously and added to their suffering. There is still on the streets around here and throughout the countryside about 4 inches of sleet. The waters, however, have frozen over and have held somewhat, and unquestionably the flood condition has been relieved, temporarily at least, by the icy condition of the water. However, I had a report late this afternoon that approximately 4 feet of water is approaching this particular section from the north. That is coming out of the upper end of Big Lake and sweeping down southward toward the little town of Dell, which is about 7 miles west of us here. Dell, incidentally, is caring for a lot of refugees, and the town itself is on rather high ground, and there isn't any immediate danger of the water going right into the town. But undoubtedly, Dell will be practically isolated. The conditions along the St. Francis Basin, of course, all the way down as far as we are here, and in fact a little south of us, are very bad. In fact, they could be termed, without much exaggeration, as being critical. Thousands of families are being cared for, and there's a good deal of suffering, as I said before, due to the cold, particularly in the last few days. The relief agencies and the people who have volunteered to bring these people out from their homes to safety are still being faced with the difficulty of in persuading these people to move. As I've said before on these broadcasts, the last thing they seem to want to do is to leave their homes and their goods, and of course we can well understand that. In Dell, by the way, there are about 150 families quartered now. And here in Blytheville, there are over 500 families being cared for. All day long on the highways in and out of these relief centers from the flooded areas can be seen refugees in all kinds of conveyances, in trucks, in wagons, and on foot. Livestock being driven, mile after mile of it. I don't mean one continuous stream, of course, but as you drive along, you run across them every quarter of a mile or so, bringing their mules and their cows and so forth to safety. and undoubtedly there is a lot of it going on, but these people down here seem to be a little different. They're the type of people that life hasn't held very much for. And it's certainly a pitiful scene to see them now as they're brought into these relief centers cold and with insufficient clothing, and many of them have children, of course. It really is a pitiful scene. This afternoon, another member of WMC staff and myself, for instance, took out a mother and her five-day-old baby. They were located just about a quarter of a mile from this Big Lake levee about which I've spoken, and they were in imminent danger of being flooded. The father came into where we were located with our shortwave transmitter and asked if we could get in touch with the Red Cross authorities here at Blytheville and get them an ambulance. But facilities, of course, are taxed to their utmost, and in order to save time, we drove down there, put an extra seat in the back of the car, and the mother and this little baby were brought out in the wagon, about a mile and a half, the house was, from the road, brought out to the road in the wagon, and then we had to lift the whole bed and everything bodily into the back of the car and bring them into town. And those are the conditions that we're seeing every day. I don't mean to take an alarming attitude, because as a matter of fact, as far as danger to life and limb is concerned, the toll seems to be very moderate throughout the country, I would say, considering the conditions. But there is a lot of suffering, and we can't, of course, close our eyes to that fact. The Red Cross, incidentally, and the U.S. engineers are doing a magnificent piece of work, particularly throughout this territory, and of course that's the only thing that I'm able to speak about with any degree of accuracy. Their facilities are taxed to the utmost, and by the way, I might here repeat an announcement by Major Burdick of the U.S. Engineers. It's addressed to people living in the Birch Point, New Madrid area floodway, which is just north of here and immediately south of the point where the Ohio River and the Mississippi converge. These people are warned to evacuate immediately. Now, this is very important. They're urged not to wait to collect their belongings, but simply to evacuate, because there's immediate danger of this area being flooded. That is addressed to anybody who might be listening and who lives in the Birch Point, New Madrid area floodway. Many of the refugees in this section are being cared for in boxcars that the railroads have placed there for their use, and they've just pulled them along in switches, and these people have lit fires in them, and you can see these strings of boxcars pulled up alongside the highways. And as you go by, these little kids poke their faces out at you and wave, and it really is a sight that one couldn't very well forget very easily. The situation down here now, as far as additional floodwaters is concerned, is that the ditches and all the depressions in the ground, of course, are covered with surface water, so that should a thaw occur in the very near future, it won't be long before the floodwaters reach an alarming stage, because there's nowhere for them to go, of course. These stores down here in these small towns throughout this section are throwing their doors open to these refugees, and it's really, I can't pass this broadcast without saying a word in praise of the citizens of the towns in the immediate location, or in the immediate vicinity of the flooded districts. They're all doing a fine piece of work, and it really is the sort of situation that compels respect and sort of rebuilds your faith in human nature. And now I see my time's about up. Immediately after this broadcast, Chief Engineer Clyde Baker and myself are going to pack up our shortwave equipment and go to Osceola and board a U.S. Engineer's barge, where we hope to get into some of the flooded territory north of here that's inaccessible by road. This has been a Red Network presentation of the National Broadcasting Company. We return you now to Chicago.
The program regularly scheduled for this period will not be heard. In its place, we bring you a special flood broadcast. We take you now to Evansville, Indiana.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? Here's today's early report on the flood situation from Evansville, Indiana, the contact point on the raging Ohio River for Indiana, Kentucky, and southeastern Illinois. Half an hour ago, the official river level stood at 50.8 feet, with the crest still expected to reach well over 53 feet on conservative estimates. During the night, the hammering of carpenters rang through the air here on the riverfront as a battery of men worked incessantly building small, flat-bottom boats, temporary boats, to help relieve the shortage of such craft. They're being built on the snow on the lawn in front of the Elks' home, which is over a block from what is usually the riverfront, where many of the Coast Guard who had to evacuate from their first quarters are quartered now when they get a chance to be relieved. And speaking of relief, it is reported that many of the field crew on rescue work and the work of helping unload supplies are near collapse from exhaustion from the constant work over several days without rest. But otherwise, the situation is well in hand. There's a good supply of big river boats and barges for handling the moving of food and clothing to outlying stricken areas. The hardest job is to get supplies loaded onto the barges, because the waters of the Ohio are licking their way into Riverfront Street. Work has now started on a temporary dock to facilitate the movement of supplies to the riverfront and onto the barges. This ramp must be built fast before the new Evansville seawall is completely covered, so that mooring posts for the big paddle wheel steamers may be placed for them to tie onto. The water is just inches from the top of the wall now, which we can see from the vantage point from where we're speaking. And now here's a late report. 600 flood refugees from Shawneetown, Kentucky, are aboard the Patricia Barrett, one of the riverboats, and will soon be on their way across the waters to Henderson, Kentucky, which is about 10 miles down the river from here, and Mount Vernon, Indiana. Shawneetown, completely surrounded by water for a few days, is now completely evacuated, and of course is underwater since the levee went out. The new weather report is not available here officially, but the sky right now looking out is heavily overcast this gray, murky morning. No rain is falling yet, and the temperature stands at freezing 32 degrees. And now for a few facts concerning supplies hereabout. The most important factor in relief work, since there's little evacuating being done now, there is an adequate food supply for about 2 weeks, with more on its way into Evansville. Gasoline, of course, is a big item on the running of rescue boats, and 250,000 gallons are on hand and accessible immediately in stations not underwater. The milk supply is fairly good, and three roads are open into Evansville from points in Vandenberg County to bring in milk and other supplies. We've been asked to make it clear to those outside the flood area that railroad transportation to the west and to the north of Evansville is open, and trains running on a fairly even schedule. The coal supply in Evansville is very short, but there's an open mine in this country, in this county down here, in Vandenberg County, producing 800 tons a day, and it's being worked 24 hours per day. Martial law is in effect in the Ohio, in the entire Indiana flooded area, starting this morning, as we flashed from here last night. Colonel Louis Roberts is in charge and is coordinating his men with the activities of the Red Cross and the U.S. Engineers. This is a precautionary measure. The decision to place this territory under martial law was set up in the governor's office yesterday afternoon, but word was not received here until late yesterday. Now that just about concludes our little time allotted us down here in Evansville for this early morning shot, but we'll be with you later in the day, so listen for us, and now we return you to Louisville.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is WAVE reporting on the flood situation from Louisville. Last evening at 11:39 p.m., WAVE was forced to leave the air due to power failure in Louisville. This greatly handicapped flood rescue work here in this vicinity, as we were reporting pickups and instructions to radio-equipped motorboats, powerboats, trucks, and automobiles. After the power failure, by means of candlelit studios, the NBC network telephone line from Louisville to Cincinnati, and the assistance of the Nation station, we were able, intermittently, to give our instructions over station WLW to rescue workers in this territory. The temperature in Louisville this morning is 33 degrees Fahrenheit. The temperature remains the same as yesterday here. We are glad to report there has been no rain since last night at 9:30. Mr. Kendall, the United States official weather forecaster for this section, reports warmer weather and probably more rain. But he further says the barometer is rising gradually, and that would indicate it might clear up. The general forecast for the Ohio Valley is probably rain and warmer. The stage of the river this morning is 54.8 feet. This was the 6 o'clock reading this morning from the United States Engineer's Office located at Dam 41. There has been a steady rise of 0.1 foot per hour at Louisville. The crest here is expected Wednesday, barring all rains. It is expected to reach 57 or 58 feet. This is a bit, and I might add, our first bit of good news, as it were. As we have said, our electric power from the Louisville Gas and Electric Company is gone. Mr. Skeets Miller of the National Broadcasting Company notified WAVE early this morning that a generator was on its way by airplane from Chicago and would be in Louisville sometime this morning, weather conditions permitting. This would permit us to then carry on our broadcast of instructions to radio-equipped flood relief workers until our generator is set up by engineers of WAVE. We hope to continue using the facilities of WLW for broadcasts to the relief workers. The electric power in Louisville will be off at least another 5 or 6 days. The relief work is getting along nicely. All theaters, dance halls, churches, and other vacant places are full of refugees. All agencies of relief are responding well. This is Bill Bond speaking. This concludes the flood report from this vicinity. It came to you from station WAVE through the Blue Network of the National Broadcasting Company. We take you now to Cincinnati.
Continuing its determined climb to almost unbelievable heights, the raging Ohio River touched 78.7 feet at Cincinnati a few minutes ago. 78 feet and 7 tenths. And there's no assurance that it will not continue on its climb until the gauge registers 80 feet. The oil fires, which have been menacing a large section of Cincinnati since yesterday morning, died out shortly after midnight. But about 4 o'clock, the flames broke out anew, and at this moment are again threatening to spread further destruction and add to the horror of the flood. Additional fire apparatus has been rushed to the scene and is now waging a determined fight to hold in check several thousand gallons of flaming gasoline, which is sweeping over the floodwaters near the Crosley Radio Company studios and plant in the Cumminsville section of the city. As yet, there has been no loss of life in the greater Cincinnati district, which includes Newport, Covington, and several northern Kentucky cities adjacent to Cincinnati. Early this morning, 2 vacant buildings in the east end section of Newport collapsed. Business in this section is practically at a standstill. Banks and only such business organizations as are engaged in actual production for food relief are operating. The citizens have responded to the call of City Manager Dykstra, and these efforts to conserve the necessities and to curtail use of electric power have enabled the utility companies to maintain both gas and electric service. Only in certain isolated sections has the gas been completely shut off, and that was due to purely localized trouble with the distribution system. Most of the homes in the suburban districts burned but 1 electric light during the night, with thousands sitting huddled about in the dark, listening to their radios, the only means available for the transmission of city regulations. The suspension bridge, which spans the river connecting Cincinnati and Covington, Kentucky, has been reopened for emergency traffic only. It had been closed during the night to permit engineers to build emergency dikes to keep both the Ohio and Kentucky approaches free of water. The entire flooded territory in Cincinnati has been absolutely free of looting. Food, clothing, and medical supplies are reaching the Red Cross in rapidly increasing quantities. And this morning it was stated there was no immediate danger of a serious food shortage. The prospect of colder weather, which is predicted for the next 2 or 3 days, is expected to increase the demand for coal. This, relief officials say, will undoubtedly cause a serious shortage of coal if the emergency continues more than a week. All banks are open today. Restaurants are operating in the downtown section. The water supply is shut off at stated intervals during the day, but this apparently is not resulting in hardship to the people. All liquor stores have been closed, and the sale of hard liquor in cafes and restaurants absolutely banned. Red Cross officials estimate 65,000 persons are homeless in the greater Cincinnati territory. Approximately 16 square miles of Cincinnati are inundated by the floodwaters. Most conservative estimates place the property damage at $7 million. This total is, of course, increasing hourly as the floodwaters reach heretofore untouched sections of the city. Ohio's Governor Martin L. Davey is expected in Cincinnati within the hour for a personal survey of the flood situation. An interesting note is this one. The Coast Guard boat sent here from Asbury Park, New Jersey, and now being used to evacuate those persons threatened, are the same lifeboats which were used in the Morro Castle ship disaster a few years ago. And these boats are manned by the very same crews. And now I should like to make this appeal to the nation. Please do not telephone or telegraph WLW for information regarding your relatives or friends in this territory. There have been no casualties. Our flood refugees are being cared for and up to this minute have suffered comparatively little. The facilities of WLW have been placed at the disposal of the relief agencies and are being taxed to the utmost under the emergency conditions. Please rest assured your friends and relatives are absolutely secure. Should this situation change at any time, this station will be on the air immediately with full and complete details. That concludes WLW's part in this flood broadcast. We take you now to Memphis.
This broadcast is coming to you direct from the editorial rooms of the Commercial Appeal. Evacuation of Paducah, Kentucky, a town of 34,000, is underway. The town was without lights, communications last night. Today, the citizens are being removed to safety via motorboats to Mayfield, Kentucky, and other points. At Cairo, Illinois, in the Memphis Engineering District, reports were received that three small gaps had been created in the upper end of the fuse plug of the Bird's Point, New Madrid fuse plug. Engineers flanked by National Guardsmen will dynamite the area this morning to save the city of Cairo, Illinois. The mayor of Cairo has ordered all women and children to leave the city as a precautionary measure.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and greetings from Portsmouth, Ohio. When we spoke to you over the NBC network last night, the river rise was 70.56. And as we told you, it was rising at the rate of 1/10 foot per hour. So this morning, a checkup with the Highway Patrol a few moments ago, the figures are 71.31. The snow has been washed away. The temperature this morning, about 32 degrees. We're forced to speak to you this morning from the north side of Portsmouth, which is known as Hilltop. The refugees from the flooded area, which is the lower part of Portsmouth, have all migrated now and are on Hilltop. The report from the State Highway Patrol this morning is that enough food is at Lincoln High School and an emergency hospital and the several other places that are housing the refugees, and throughout the day they will at least have a limited amount of food. We are told by the Highway Patrol Colonel Lynn Black that sometime throughout the day, approximately 20 nurses and several additional doctors will fight their way through the floodwaters and arrive here at Portsmouth. There is no epidemic of any kind breaking out as yet. The rate of pneumonia cases are surprisingly low. We're happy to tell you this morning that the NBC Mobile Unit Number 5 will perhaps be utilized today and manned by Alvin McMahon and Frank Whittem in the assistance of rescue work. The radio station, Mac, what is the call letters? WPAY have been doing yeoman work. That's one of the small stations of the country operating here out of Portsmouth. And the work that they have been able to accomplish with the police department has helped in a large way in rescuing all of the persons over in the flooded area. Last night, one of the large tubes of the radio went out, but this morning, the NBC mobile unit will be put into working order sometime throughout the day to assist the police. All orders for persons to evacuate are becoming more strenuous from the order of Lynn Black, and the people on the second floor that have gone into the attics were rescued early this morning. The water is rising at the rate of 1/10 foot per hour, and they're just going to have to get out. You know, a lot of the folks last night that we came in contact with while making a trip up through town said they did not want to leave their home, that they wanted to ride the flood out. There's a certain amount of pride in doing that. Others said that they didn't want to leave their home and come over into the crowded school buildings and so forth. They would rather sit over there and watch the flood waters. But they're coming up now. We've noticed that the billboards that we saw last night are completely inundated. But I believe before the day is over that there will another additional carload of food and medicine will be gotten in to Portsmouth. But everything is going along fine. People are still taking it nonchalant. There is no rain at the moment, and the temperature is 32 degrees. We take you now to Pittsburgh.
Threats of another flood hang over Pittsburgh this morning as the Allegheny and Monongahela rivers begin to rise. The new rise in the water comes as a result of rain which fell at the headwaters of these rivers last night. Previous to this rain, the rivers had fallen to 28 feet in Pittsburgh. Then both rivers started their new climb. At 8 o'clock this morning, waters at the junction of the Allegheny and the Monongahela, which, by the way, is the origin of the Ohio River, was just below the 30-foot mark, 5 feet above stage where property damage begins. Just how high the new rise will go depends upon the amount of rainfall in the western Pennsylvania watershed. Federal forecaster Brotsman in Pittsburgh expects the rivers to go over the 30-foot mark later today. Grateful for the recession of the waters early Saturday, Pittsburgh was contributing aid yesterday to the stricken downriver communities. Mayor Scully led the public appeal for a $150,000 contribution to assist the Red Cross work. He asked Pittsburgh's cooperation after conferences with the Red Cross, reminding the citizens here of the aid given by the Red Cross last year during the St. Patrick's Day disaster. The Red Cross sent 1,500 additional blankets to Cincinnati last night. Headquarters are being maintained to receive donations of food, bed, clothing, and other supplies, which are being sent downriver as rapidly as they come in. Emergency shelters set up for the hundreds driven from their homes in Sharpsburg, McKees Rocks, and the north side in Pittsburgh, the hardest hit sections, were almost deserted yesterday. Clinging to their homes, the refugees had gone back to clean out the dirt and debris left by the muddy waters. Many already had fires started and an air of comfort restored by an early hour last night. Streets were being cleaned up as the riverside inhabitants looked forward apprehensively to the new deluge. Pumps labored creakingly outside several downtown buildings where cellars had caught the overflow. Extra police and the deputy sheriffs held themselves in readiness for a call to duty, but no disorder has been reported. We want to emphasize at this time that the flood crest reached in Pittsburgh last Friday, a crest of approximately 33 feet, was, as you probably know, in no way comparable to the crest of 46 feet, which occurred in Pittsburgh last St. Patrick's Day. However, as we emphasized before this broadcast, our flood stage is 25 feet, and at the present time, the rivers stand at approximately 30 feet, 5 feet above the level where property damage begins. How high this new rise in the Allegheny and Monongahela and the origin of the Ohio River will go depends entirely upon the amount of water falling in the watersheds north of Pittsburgh. Our weather forecast for today is cloudy and colder, with fair and cold tomorrow. So what's going to happen, we know not. But that is the picture of the flood situation in Pittsburgh. We take you now to New York.
The Red Cross has requested us to make the following announcement. Anyone with a truck and available driver living in the territory adjacent to the stricken flood zone is urged to report for service to the nearest Red Cross headquarters. An immediate problem being experienced in the relief work is the piling up of supplies that, for lack of transportation and drivers, cannot be sent further into the stricken areas. And now the National Broadcasting Company repeats a special flood roundup from the Press Radio Bureau. President Roosevelt kept his private telephone open all last night, receiving telephone calls for federal aid from the stricken flood areas. The president has ordered 35,000 WPA workers to emergency flood duty along the 1,800 miles of raging rivers. The WPA Army will aid in evacuating thousands from cities and towns in the Ohio and Mississippi River valleys, and also will be on guard duty at food stations. This emergency army also will build refugee camps and aid state and federal health authorities who are fighting the spread of contagious diseases. WPA Administrator Hopkins says that 100,000 mattresses and comforters, which were made on WPA women's projects, have been ordered sent to the flood areas, and that 300 boats have been borrowed for their delivery. Federal health authorities are taking over control of the available water supplies in Louisville, Portsmouth, and other points in Ohio, and will chlorinate all drinking water before it is used. This precaution is being taken to prevent the spread of disease. There is assurance this morning that food supplies will be rapidly moved into the flooded cities and towns which are destitute. The United States Navy is sending vessels from the Navy Yards at Philadelphia and Norfolk, West Virginia, to the stricken area. These vessels, in addition to some 150 Coast Guard boats, will deliver beef, eggs, and canned milk to the stricken cities. The supplies are owned by the government's Commodity Surplus Corporation, and have been released by President Roosevelt. To provide money for the destitute, WPA Administrator Hopkins said he will open the nation's relief rolls to victims of the flood. The government has lifted all rules and regulations in the emergency, and he promised that all the money necessary will be provided by the government. The Coast Guard is moving ships up the Mississippi to the Louisville and Cincinnati areas. These boats are loaded with medicine, blankets, and other emergency supplies. Altogether, 72 rescue vessels of the Coast Guard are now operating in the stricken area. President Roosevelt has arranged for 2 conferences daily at the White House with Red Cross officials and is in personal communication with officials at Cincinnati. And to supplement the work of the WPA Army, 12,000 CCC workers are now on duty in the flood zones. The Red Cross in Washington estimates that some 350,000 persons are homeless in the 11 states that are flooded. The total damage is expected to go beyond the high mark of $300 million last year. Under the protection of armed National Guardsmen, United States Army engineers were prepared this morning to dynamite the Ohio River levee below Cairo, Illinois, in order to save that city. Up to now, Cairo has escaped heavy damage under protection of a flood wall. The guardsmen are necessary because farmers have prevented the opening of the levee so far by threatening to shoot the engineers. The National Guardsmen will be under the direction of Lieutenant Colonel Eugene Ray Bulk of the United States Regular Army. 7 Coast Guard amphibian planes which were ordered to flood duty have been unable to reach the stricken area because of rain, fog, and other bad weather. The Coast Guard also is sending a number of portable radio stations to various cities in order to restore communications where none now exist. 2 Coast Guard portable stations already are operating, and 4 more will be set up immediately. The biggest problem is transporting food and supplies to small communities, according to Admiral Kerry T. Grayson, chairman of the American Red Cross. The Admiral has a fleet of outboard motorboats numbering 100 at anchor in Evansville, Indiana, and these will be used in reaching the small communities, he said. Altogether, 120 emergency stations have been opened by the Red Cross. Each of these stations will begin immediately to buy whatever clothing and foodstuff is necessary. This news is from the Press Radio Bureau and is based on the latest reports of the Associated Press, the United Press, and Universal Service. The Press Radio Bureau operates as a public service to radio listeners by the newspapers in cooperation with the broadcasters.